This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
Good evening and welcome. It's World Wide Wave time, the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. Now, tonight in the studio, you've got Chris, Damien, newbie Dean, welcome, and myself, Matt, as we take you to Mongolia. What difference is Pride having to raising the profile of LGBT people in this fascinating country? How are mums supporting their gay children? And what is the link between Australia and the Mongolian LGBT rights movement? This is a country making remarkable progress in a region where LGBT rights are in fact going backwards. To understand gay life in Mongolia tonight, we are speaking with Otton Batar Setendembrel. He is one of the only out gay men in Mongolia, and he is the in charge of Mongolia's LGBT Advocacy Centre.
Hello, Australia. This is Gabrielle from Luxembourg. From the other side of the world, we share in your fight for same-sex marriage. Good luck to everyone at Joy 94.9.
It's Worldwide Wave. You've got the gang here, and we're launching into some fun fast facts on Mongolia.
Homosexuality was decriminalised in Mongolia in 2002. So at the moment, there is no legal recognition of same-sex marriages, civil unions, or domestic partnerships. And there's also no legal protection based on sexual orientation or gender identity. However, there is some good news, Matt.
Yes, give us some good news.
Mongolia is implementing some measures in response to recommendations from various UN bodies.
And the person responsible for these changes, actually, in part, is the person we'll be speaking with later, Otton Batar from the LGBT Centre of Mongolia. So some of the things that are going to be implemented, hopefully, include amendments to the constitution to include sexual orientation and gender identity, as well as health status and disability as grounds of non-discrimination. And also this month there will be discussions on amending the criminal law to include non-discrimination provisions based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And so this will be protection for victims of hate crimes and things like that.
And we'll be hearing from Otton about the influence of the United Nations and the European Union on pushing through some of these reforms within Mongolia. Mongolia's got an interesting history too, because it's come from a shamanistic culture. It's heavily Buddhist. About 60% of the population identifies with Buddhism in terms of their religion, although there is a really large chunk that has that identifies with no religion at all, which is interesting.
That is particularly interesting. So prior to Buddhism, which came to Mongolia in the 17th century, the shamans themselves were actually known to get married to people of their same gender. And so some female shamans would live as men and some male shamans would live as women, and they would take husbands or wives of the same sex, and this was a completely normal thing to do. But it all changed under communism when homosexuality was criminalised.
And it seems things perhaps are reinventing themselves in the area. There is a push, and we delve into the topic of Russia and its influence in the region on LGBT issues with the many issues that are going on there now.
And we'll also hear a little bit in our interview about the rights of trans people and intersex people in Mongolia. And it looks like it's good news with trans and intersex people now being able to change their ID cards to reflect their gender identity in some very specific cases.
And this is something that's right up, I mean, very progressive in terms of LGBT rights for a basic transgender right to be up there with with other rights.
Absolutely. And even just last week, if you listen back to our podcasts on the World Wide Wave on the Joy website, you'll be able to hear our intersex episode where we talked to Intersex Australia about the rights of intersex people all around the world. And the finding there was that intersex people can very rarely have their status recognised anywhere. So for them to be able to be recognised in Mongolia, I think is pretty damn amazing.
Absolutely. We have an really, really fascinating interview with Otton Batar in Mongolia, who shared some time with us tonight. You are going to be surprised.
This is Audrey Gochran, the director of Amnesty International's Africa program on the World Wide Wave.
It is a worldwide wave where we're taking you around the globe one country at a time, where tonight we've stopped off in Mongolia. Now, we made a call to Otton Batar, who is the executive officer of Mongolia's LGBT Centre. And we started by asking Otton how the LGBT Centre was formed.
Back in 2007, we were founded, but it took 3 years to, you know, get registered officially. So finally, we were registered in 2009. And from then on, it's been, you know, quite hectic for us, yeah.
I've heard a lot of organisations in the region have quite a lot of difficulty registering. Is there an active law that says that LGBT organisations can't register?
No, I mean, the state registration agency, the state agency which is mandated to register NGOs, basically denied registering us because the name of the NGO includes LGBT and they said it was not recognized. So we had to ask our international organizations to help us to push the government. And finally, after 3 years, I mean, also thanks to the local politicians, it happened. Basically, their letter said that the name lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender is against Mongolian customs and traditions, and it has some potential risk to set wrong example to youth and adolescents. So that was back in 2009, but we got finally registered in December 2009.
And what actually is the situation for LGBT people? Is it illegal to be in a same-sex relationship, for example?
Well, I mean, it's quite, you know, ambiguous. I mean, there is no law which specifically says about the LGBT people. But back in 1986, the state decriminalized homosexuality. So now, basically, we are accepted, but the general public is still struggling to recognize and accept, you know, LGBT individuals in this country because of basically 70 years of socialism, which ended in the 1990s, and still those concepts such as human rights, democracy, gender issues, they're kind of like, you know, Western import kind of issues. So we're struggling, you know, a lot with the acceptance and visibility, yeah.
How does that play out in the daily life of a gay or lesbian person? What sort of issues might they face living in Mongolia?
Well, I mean, you know, if you ask, there are just, you know, a handful of out and proud LGBT people in this town, and the rest basically are closeted or still under the pressure, you know, from family or from their surroundings. So mostly people will be quite, you know, hidden. But, you know, because of all these government discussions and Pride Week we organized last year, a lot of young people kind of approach us, at least through, you know, Facebook, and kind of like visit our office and discuss how to come out or when is best, you know, something like that. But I mean, like, for example, this morning, we just discovered at the LGBT Center that one website copied our photos from Facebook and wrote an article saying the Mongolian gay people are partying like crazy. So we just immediately called that people and asked them, you know, because of personal security, and a lot of people's photos were there. And then thankfully, they just immediately took it down. So the day-to-day, like, situation for people will be quite, you know, concerned with their security risks, because Mongolia is so small. I mean, the overall population is about 2.9 million. And in the capital city, Ubi, it is about 1 million. And if you think about the community, it's even smaller than that. So it's kind of like everyone knows everybody kind of, you know, atmosphere. So people are very, very afraid. Yeah.
And so I suppose not so far away, you've got Russia, which is instituting now its gay propaganda laws. Has there been any sort of influence on the situation in Mongolia because of that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, we used to be our, you know, very close brothers. But after the collapse of the socialistic regime, I think Mongolia and Russia had to go into their own, you know, different ways. Mongolia choosing a more, you know, democratic path. And Russia, in terms of the human rights situations there, is actually a lot worse than how it is in Mongolia. But still, those, you know, who have still some certain longing for the old days, those, you know, Russian-schooled people or conservative groups of people saying that what's happening in Russia is, you know, really right. And in Mongolia, we should not actually advertise homosexuality so that it will have a very negative impact on our next generations. So definitely partly in our society, there are groups of people who are, you know, definitely applauding what Russia is doing, which is very hard for us.
Does Mongolia as a culture have a, in that it has taken a different path towards democracy, is there a defiance against Russia, or do you think that the ties are still close?
Well, ties culturally is still quite close. In the late 1990s and early 2000s, it was not that great. But again, you know, that kind of brotherhood is rekindling, you know, back these days. But, you know, politically, Mongolia, you know, chooses its allies. For example, U.S., Japan and Western European countries are our close allies. And with Russia, probably through the railroad and some trade agreements, we're still quite close. But the general public, you know, the sentiment is, well, you know, more we have to lean towards, you know, Western Europe. That's why, you know, a lot of respect, you know, in terms of adopting new laws, policies and ideas, you know, especially surrounding human rights issues, we definitely follow the Western European trends.
And that's the voice of Otton Batar, who is the executive officer of the Mongolian LGBT Centre. This issue of Russia, it's come up quite a bit. In fact, our show recently with Ukraine, same sort of thing, this tug of war between the influence of Russia and the influence of the European Union. It's quite fascinating.
It's pretty fascinating, and it's quite amazing that Mongolia, unlike some of its neighbours, seems to be quite heavily resisting this move back towards the dark ages of poor treatment to LGBT people. Perhaps the strong influence of, I suppose, the EU support might be the reason for that.
Certainly a part of it. It does... when countries go for EU membership, they have to qualify in certain areas of human rights, and part of that is rights for LGBT people. But there just seems to be this sense that they are on a path. I mean, this group has only been going for 2 or 3 years and they've made such enormous progress already.
Yeah, and the scope of the activities that they have, you know, a PFLAG group, later on we'll hear about a Pride March, a queer film festival, I mean...
Making presentations to the United Nations.
Exactly, and I think it's quite amazing that Mongolia particularly looks like it's one of the countries, very unlike Australia, that is very receptive to the recommendations that come out of the UN, because I know in Australia it's just kind of a big finger to the people sitting in Geneva and New York, but from what Otto's been saying, it sounds like the Mongolian government actually listens and cares about what other countries think about its human rights record.
Now, Damien, you were raising a question there before too about the influence of the shaman culture and why there has been this transition.
Yeah, I was just noting that if same-sex kind of marriages and diverse gender roles were part of the culture, it wasn't something foreign, something new, how did they manage to change to something that was the complete opposite, you know, when communism came in, and how did people adapt and react to that?
And I wondered if the shaman culture was as accepting as it seems, because the website that I pulled that fact from said that the boys and girls who were picked to be shamans were picked when they were very young, so 11 or 12 years old. And so the element of choice doesn't seem to be 100% there. So it might be that while some people were allowed to marry people of the same sex, it was within very strict confines, and for the rest of society, it still wasn't acceptable.
This is Eve from Cameroon on Joy 94.9.
It's the World Wide Wave, where tonight we've stopped off in Mongolia and we've been speaking with Otton Batar, the CEO of the Mongolian LGBT Centre. And we wanted to know more about the centre and what they did. Tell us about the LGBT centre and the services that you provide.
LGBT Centre, we have four staff, me and our legal and rural outreach program officer, Baya, and transgender and advocacy program manager, Mogi, and youth and health program manager, Nyamka. And we also have a research and also PFLAG program. It is small, and we actually occupy this one-room office space within a private university called Linguistics and Civilization University. Our center has been quite dynamic, and since our official registration with the authorities, we worked very heavily on the international advocacy at the UN and EU level, and we got very strong recommendations from UPR mechanism at the Human Rights Council and CAT and ICC. PR from the human rights committees. And because of that, the government is actually obligated to implement all these UN recommendations. And that's what we've been focusing on. There's one amazing thing within our legal system. For example, in civil registration law, there's a provision which states that if you can prove that you are either transgender or intersex by the health providers or institutions, we can change the sex and your preferred name in our national ID card. And as a result of that, so far, three trans individuals have been through that procedure. And that's amazing. I mean, you know, if you think about other countries' legislations, these kind of, you know, very advanced law is not there. So we really focus on legal reforms and advocacy, policy change at different sectors and so on. So we've been doing very, very busy. And last year in September, we organized our first Pride Week, which was a success, but at the same time, because of having a very hidden and scared committee members, we could not organize it outdoors like any Pride parades of other countries.
So how did you get the message out to people to come along and be a part of Pride?
Well, I mean, by Facebook, by Messenger, by phone. And the first day, of course, it included a lot of other human rights organizations, international organizations. So the committee members were kind of blending in. It was great. And the second day, we had the multimedia exhibition. And then the third day, some forum on MSM, HIV, LGBT rights issues. And then the next 3 days were our first queer film festival. The attitude, I mean, of committee members, how they engaged in, actually showed us how we should also work in the future to engage more committee members. During the queer film festival, for example, when we turned off the lights, there were more people coming in. And once we turned on the light and started the discussion, half of them kind of disappeared. So that still shows, you know, how the community members are, you know, feeling more comfortable or being in their own skin at the moment.
You mentioned earlier that there is a PFLAG component of the Mongolian LGBT Centre. Could you tell me a bit more about that?
You know, more and more parents, I mean, in this case, mothers usually, and friends, close friends, are taking interest in basically how to advocate these issues for the general public. But again, since our LGBT rights movement is in its still early stage, we still, you know, kind of dealing with how the parents reacted to the coming out, you know, experience of their children. And last Saturday, we had one of our, you know, a series of PFLAG meetings, and basically mothers were crying, talking about how they dealt with the whole thing, and especially when it is only child of their family, it seems to be very difficult for them. Because, you know, during the socialistic era, Mongolian families used to be very large, about 7-9 children. For example, I'm the youngest one, and the other sisters and brothers above us, if they have children, parents feel a little bit more relaxed. But it's still the whole, a lot of, you know, different procedure that they go through to accept their own child. Only mothers show up, and then sisters come, and then we're still trying to get fathers and brothers and male friends. But I guess that's something to do with our masculine culture. Coming from the nomadic background, Mongolian, you know, has a very strong idea of what masculinity and femininity is. And accepting LGBT community, again, is no exception at all. So it is still, you know, problematic for us how to engage more. And then down the road, we will be talking more about strategic strategic ways how the parents and friends of LGBT community could, you know, advocate the issues targeting the general public.
Do you think because of that strong heritage, you said it was quite a male dominant culture, that the experience of same-sex attracted women as opposed to men, or of trans men as opposed to women, might be different?
Well, I mean, definitely for gay men, I mean, you know, they always say that you are spoiling that image, you know, of the real or true or genuine Mongolian men's kind of imagery. And that comes very strong from the ultra-nationalist groups or very traditionalist, you know, groups. For lesbian women, of course, there is that, you know, hatred and discrimination against that, but not as, you know, severe as it is for the trans community. Trans community basically are ridiculed by the general public and, of course, by the government officials because they are ruining this, you know, traditional, you know, perception of Mongolian men.
Now, I believe there is an Australian link with the Mongolian LGBT Centre. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Oh, yes. Our former executive director, Robin Garner, actually, she's the one of the co-founders of the organization. So in that way, we feel very close to Australia. And also here in this country, we have IAD, the Australian Youth Ambassador Program, and those amazing, enthusiastic, passionate volunteers. They actually worked at the UN office in Mongolia, National Human Rights Commission, and all the other, you know, organizations. So we work actually very closely with each other, and they actually write pieces on Mongolian LGBT rights situations. So dynamic. And now we are actually expecting one artist volunteer from Brisbane to help sensitize the LGBT rights issues through art and entertainment. So if the city council or the authorities in Australia could approve his trip to Mongolia, it would be an amazing experience for us, you know, Mongolians, how to use art and entertainment and this very creative thing to move forward in our movement. And at the same time, it will be a great experience for Nathan Stoneham. He will be he's still, you know, applying and is in the process.
That is fantastic. Otten Batar, thank you for joining us on the World Wide Wave. You are doing remarkable work with such a small team, and we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much, Joy 94.9, for inviting LGBT Centre of Mongolia on your show.
I found that so inspiring. He was such a joy to chat to, and they are doing so many things with such limited resources.
And with such optimism as well. I mean, the amount of change that they've affected, and also how hopeful he sounded for, you know, things to come, I think is pretty amazing. A queer film festival.
Yeah, but I did laugh when the lights go down, everybody comes in, and when the lights go up, everybody disappears.
But you know what? The first time
I understand it, but
first time I went to Melbourne's queer film festival, I did exactly the same thing. I snuck into a lesbian film and then snuck out before the credits were finished, and then sat outside and pretended not to be part of the crowd while I watched all the pretty gays come out.
But you don't do that anymore.
No, not anymore.
And in fact, Melbourne Queer Film Festival is coming up very soon with a packed program. The other interesting thing there, parents, mums and sisters getting involved, still hope that dads will become involved and brothers, you know, that gender divide.
I love the idea that there is a PFLAG over there, though, because I always think of a PFLAG organisation as something that you'd have in the US or the UK or Australia, but I don't know, for some reason, the idea of parents getting actively involved in the well-being of their young people, or needing to talk about it even, never crossed my mind that it would happen anywhere else.
And the Australian connection, very surprising that Australians... not just one or two, there have been several that have been over and actively involved, Robin Garner, and potentially an artist, Nathan, from Brisbane. We hope that his funding and his application gets through.
Yeah, hopefully. And I think it goes to show just what an impact having budget put aside for foreign aid and for our Australian Youth Ambassadors Program, what it really does, because it sounds like the IADs over there working with his centre and the Human Rights Centre do some really tangible, positive things for rights in Mongolia.
Taxpayers' dollars at work.
Yeah, doing good stuff.
Absolutely.
Even Otten Batar was saying, you know, it is a two-way thing, that the benefits are for the artists coming over, but they're also reaping the benefits of how art can be used to express, you know, the values of LGBT people.
Hi, everyone. My name is Yang Fa from Singapore. You are listening to World Wide Wave on Joy, and lots of love to everyone at Joy 94.9.
It's time for Worldwide Rapids, where we look at what's been going on in the world of LGBT issues. And what have you got there, Chris?
So this news came out about a week ago, but for anyone who hasn't heard, because it's so wonderful, I think it's worth repeating. Experts in Victoria have called for gay sex convictions to be abolished nationally. And this is after the Vic government just announced a few days ago that it would erase the convictions for sex between two consenting adult males. And so, you know, some people might ask, what's the big deal? You know, these convictions happened in the 70s, in the 80s, oh, no, sorry, in the 70s and the 60s. You know, why does that matter for today? And it turns out that in some states, not all, but in Victoria in particular, if you get a new job, convictions from your whole life, if a police check is ordered, a criminal check is ordered, have to be shown. So not just stuff that's happened in the last decade, which is the standard for other states, which means that you're in a situation where people who have gay sex convictions have sometimes not been able to move jobs or have had to live under the shadow of these 30-year-old convictions, which have long since been outdated. So it's a pretty remarkable change coming through, and hopefully New South Wales and Tasmania will also follow suit.
Yay! So this goes back to the 80s for most states where they had these convictions. So people who were convicted before then, some good news.
Yeah, wonderful.
Excellent. On a slightly less wonderful topic, Nigeria, which is on the Ivory Coast in Africa, and probably best known as the country with the former members of the royal family desperately looking for somewhere to park their missing millions, if you've have been checking any of your emails over the last 15 years or so.
I always get emails from Nigeria, but it's usually asking for money. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm got millions of dollars and I'm desperate for somewhere to put it because I can't possibly keep it anywhere in my country. So if I could just keep it in your bank account for a while, that's usually the tenor of the emails. But yeah, on a more serious topic, the Nigerian president, Goodluck Jonathan, which is a very cool name, I must say, has unfortunately signed a bill that criminalises same-sex relationships and has defied pressure from Western governments to respect gay and lesbian rights. So the bill, which contains penalties of up to 14 years in prison and bans gay marriage, same-sex amorous relationships and membership of gay rights groups, has been passed by the National Assembly last May.
Jonathan, what if they're not amorous?
As is so often the case.
What if you're, you know, a settled couple and, you know...
Yeah, the thrill
is gone.
Stuff
is fizzled out. You know, that sort of thing. Now, I think you'd be immune.
Yeah, look, I mean, so President Goodluck Jonathan has received some pressure from international, as you can imagine, from the West to perhaps rescind this bill. He hasn't passed it into law. He's delayed it somewhat. I think he's hedging his bets, but unfortunately...
But it seems to be doing jack all, because I hear that the arrests have already been made.
Yes. Well, I suspect a lot of it's about shoring up his political support before the upcoming election. And there's not a lot of pressure we can put on them because they, unlike Uganda and Malawi, where we've been able to sort of threaten them with rescinding the aid or just sort of, yeah, not passing the hat around anymore, Nigeria has a budget that's funded by 2 million barrels of oil a day, so they can do what they damn well please.
Interestingly, though, Richard Branson has been one of the people who has come out. Ban Ki-moon from United Nations has come out as well with, I guess, rhetoric. But Richard Branson has been encouraging the business community to take a stand on this and actually boycott business with Nigeria and Uganda until they level out their human rights, until they make some changes.
That's pretty astonishing and a very brave move for a businessman, I think. And you need to be careful with the language you use, Matt, because when you said Richard Branson has come out and so has Ban Ki-moon, I was like, what?
Why did we cover that earlier?
How come we didn't
you
do
heard
that?
It here. I didn't think of it that way. I do apologise.
Let's hope no one sort of switched off the radio at that exact moment.
They probably switched on and called their friends. Across to Germany now, and Angela Merkel is under pressure from her local supporters to push through equal marriage. Basically, one of the MPs who is in a civil partnership has said that the only thing stopping marriage equality in Germany is Angela Merkel giving it her support.
And can you imagine, Germany is such a big country, so if you were to look at those coloured in maps of where same-sex marriage is legal, it would fill in such a big patch of Europe.
What they need to do, apparently she, I think, fractured her pelvis in a skiing accident recently. They just need to waft the bill under her nose while she's high on morphine. Just sign here, Angela. And here.
It is probably, Germany's a very advanced culture and very advanced in the area of rights. In fact, there's kind of one of the they're probably not quite up there with the Netherlands in terms of the way they push international rights, but they are a leader, but this is one area where they haven't yet turned the corner.
It's that Teutonic reserve.
Perhaps the words of advice and support from England and similar countries where it has gone through might sort of ring true a bit.
Yeah, I think it's only time before it happens. So we've had such a great 2013, so 2014 is the time for Germany.
Surely no country can withstand the onslaught of Eurovision for that long.
And one more, Uganda, which has been for so long in the news. The anti-gay bill, so it started off as Kill the Gays Bill. It then passed as Jail the Gays Bill. It was actually rejected by the Ugandan president, President Museveni. And that's the good news. The less good news is that he said that there are probably better ways that we could look after abnormal people.
Yes, and I think he referred to LGBT people as mercenaries, which actually made me feel like a badass, so I didn't mind it so much, but I think he didn't mean it as a compliment.
Yes, he says it could be that Western societies, on account of random breeding, have generated many abnormal people.
Random breeding, well, blame it on the non-same-sex attracted people then.
I wonder if this is his way of playing both sides of the fence so that for the locals he's seen to be, you know, anti-gay, but for the international community who've been putting so much pressure on him, he's prevented the law.
It's
so
quite
far.
Suspect when they want to take it out of the court system and just into the vigilante system.
Hello and goedenavond. This is Elko, listening in from the Netherlands on Worldwide Wave, the latest LGBT news and current affairs on joy.org.au.
It's been fascinating tonight being in Mongolia, a country that I guess not many Aussies go to, but the ones that do, as we've learnt tonight, have made an impact. So a big thank you to Autumn Batar from the Mongolian LGBT Centre, and best of luck with all their initiatives there. Thanks, a big shout out to Robert on the front desk, who's with us each and every week. Now, coming up for our shows, we've got shows in the throes with Bangladesh, with Pride House and the International Olympic Committee, and South Korea. So some really fascinating things coming up. Dean, you survived your first show listening in. Thanks for being here.
It was a pleasure, Matt.
This has been the Worldwide Wave. Chris, Damien, Matt and Dean, and we'll catch up with you next week on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to the Worldwide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.